This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak with Deborah Berger, RN, who's the president of the California Nurses Association. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you very much.
We're going to talk about Prop 71. Is the California Nurses Association the same as this alliance that's just been formed? What's the relationship between the two?
The alliance is part of the group that CNA belongs to now.
Okay, what's the full name of the alliance?
The California Progressive Alliance.
Okay, and what's the position of that group on Proposition 71, the stem cell initiative?
We are against the stem cell initiative.
Okay, now, go ahead.
I should clarify that we are all pro-choice groups.
Right.
We are all for stem cell research.
Right.
But we are all against this initiative.
Okay, so most of the other opponents, it seems, to Prop 71 have been coming from what they call a pro-life point of view.
Correct.
And you don't share that point of view, but you share the position of those groups on this particular issue that Prop 71 isn't a good idea.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
We've come at it for different reasons. Some of those groups that are the pro-life group also share our concerns for the budget impact on the state of California, but the California Nurses Association and these other groups that are in the alliance against Prop 71 have come out against this initiative, not just because of the budget, but because of poor guidelines for patient protections. And that's sort of where CNA started getting involved. Initially, we looked at the funding and realized the funding structure was very flawed. But as we started looking at the initiative itself, there were a number of women's issues involved in this, and we felt that there were poor patient protections when you were asking women to undergo surgery and take hormones to extract the eggs that they would use for the research.
Okay, we're going to go into those women's issues in a second.
Okay.
First, is your alliance group working with pro-life groups that are also opposed to Prop 71? Is there sort of going to be an overarching alliance of pro-life and pro-choice groups together united against Prop 71?
Well, that's a little more difficult to work out.
Right.
We had a very difficult time in coming out against this initiative to begin with.
Why was that?
Because most of our natural allies that we work with all the time in the community are supporting Prop 71.
And why is that, do you think?
Well, I haven't exactly been able to really talk to some of the groups. I think what they see is the promise of cures for long-term chronic diseases that take a toll on the community. I think that they see this as a way to address the needs of funding for stem cell research, because stem cell research has been so underfunded in the Bush administration's regime.
Right.
And so they feel that this is like their last hope for getting adequate funding.
Well, how do you feel about that? Obviously, the difference on that question is that the crux of your disagreement with your traditional allies. What's the counter argument to their saying that this is the only way that money and energy can ever go into stem cell research?
Well, I think if it's publicly funded, I would necessarily not have any disagreement with that.
Right.
Where our disagreement comes is what happens with that public funding and who benefits.
Okay,
from it.
Let's talk about that. Your press release here says that Prop 71 allocates up to $6 billion in state money. I wanted to correct you, I guess, in a polite way. It provides up to $3 billion, but it's going to cost $6 billion to pay off the bonds.
Well, and that's what we meant by
okay.
We will be funding $6 billion
right.
or more.
Right.
If the interest rate on the bonds that they sell are anything more than 5.4%,
and interest,
which could
right.
fees.
And interest rates are at historically low levels right now.
Right, but who knows what will happen by the
exactly.
time this bond would pass.
Right.
If it's over 5.4, then the payoff is going to be more than $6 billion.
Exactly, okay.
Now, the other crux of this financing is that it comes at a time when the economy has not recovered. We have just funded $150 billion to cover the last year's deficit, right, for the state, and we are already running in a deficit now. So
that was $15 billion, actually, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The last stopgap was for $15 billion.
Okay, right? I actually thought it was a little more
yeah,
than
that.
With the last
you may be thinking
release.
About the federal government that's about $450 billion in deficit. Yes.
No, they're trillion. I'm not confused about
oh.
that one.
Oh, yeah.
But the issue is that there's only 20% of the state budget
right.
that is discretionary spending
right.
that isn't spoken for right now for any federal matching programs, for state-mandated programs, for federal-mandated programs, and then any other initiatives that had already passed. So they're going to move to the top of the line for that last 20% of the discretionary funding to pay off
right.
those general obligation bonds.
So does that
as a result of them moving to the top of the line and using up what remaining discretionary funding there is, there will be public health cuts, public education cuts, infrastructure cuts, consumer board or consumer bureau oversight cuts. So those very people that have the potential to benefit from any cure, which is arguable at this point, are going to suffer the impact immediately when we have to start paying off these billions of dollars of bonds by health care cuts. Their in-home daycare attendance cuts, any kind of drug benefit or health care benefit that these people receive in the state of California
These, in fact, are the same people who ostensibly are going to be served by the breakthroughs in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, diabetes,
absolutely.
And other, and essentially the money is being taken away from their contemporary, from their current support levels
right.
to fund research which may or may not yield results.
Which may or may not. We don't know what's going to come out of this. There's these promises that they have made saying that they're are potential cures for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all of those things through stem cell research, but we don't know that.
It's almost as though a Titanic were sinking and money could have been spent on lifeboats or on research into navigation techniques,
mm-hmm.
and the money is all being allocated for the research and navigation techniques.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Yes. So say something specifically about how you feel about the difference in funding for the campaigns. It's my understanding that the No on 71 campaign has about $150,000 to spend, and at the last time I saw anything about it, the Yes on 71 has $20 million to spend.
I heard the last time it was up to almost $23 million.
Okay.
And
which is obviously paying for the commercials that we see every time we turn on the TV.
For the commercials,
right.
And a lot of them are what they call philanthropists, and but they're also venture capitalists, and they're hoping that as a result of this stem cell research funding, there's going to be new construction of facilities, because part of the bond includes construction of research facilities.
Right.
It includes funding for, you know, these research grants. But then the discoveries, if there are any, then have to be patented and then put into biotech companies or pharmaceutical companies for development. And once it gets there, the biotech and pharmaceutical industry is a multi-billion dollar industry that will continue to generate profits under patent laws for years to come, and will make it unavailable for the general public, just as the breast cancer exam. There's a special test genetically to decide whether you're predisposed to breast cancer or not. The very women that donated those eggs for that research, their daughters can't afford to get that test because it costs over $2,000.
You're not saying that this plan would socialize the risk while privatizing the profit, are you?
What a concept! I am.
Well, there's a quote here in an article about this in the Sacramento Bee from the published last Friday, where Roger Salazar, a spokesperson for Yes in 71, says that, well, we're just doing it the same way NIH already does federally sponsored research. The public does all the research and the private companies make all the money.
Right. And that's what we're saying is wrong.
Right.
What they're doing is setting up a research institute here in California that will dwarf the NIH.
Right, and exactly. Let me quote Roger Salazar, the spokesperson for Yes in 71. He, in this B article, he says, the basic research is generally done in universities, research institutions, nonprofits. But as you move forward and get it to the developmental stage where you can bring it to the public, you partner up with private companies. What does he mean by partner up, exactly?
He means selling the patents and selling the licenses to produce those to very specific companies.
Right.
And the very people that did the research at public expense then move over to the private corporations, and we don't get to keep the part of their brain that did all of the research and then have the company spend all of the money on the development. And when you look at the amount of money that a company spends on development, it is minuscule. It's like, I think the last time I heard, it's less than 12%.
They spend more than that on advertising, on television, telling people to call their doctors and order
right,
the drug.
Right, and ask for a drug, whether right. they actually need the drug or not. And that's, see, what we had suggested and asked a question about was whether the discoveries could be open sourced.
Were you in any discussions with
no,
the people who wrote the bill?
That was the problem, was they came to us after the fact, after the ballot initiative had already qualified for the ballot,
right.
and asked to support it.
Right.
They did not come to us beforehand and say, you know, you're a large nurses group, what would you recommend?
Right.
They
so,
didn't do that.
Well, explain
and I
here
think
what
they
yeah.
didn't do it
right.
because they didn't want our input. They just wanted our unquestioning support.
So explain in more detail what you mean by open sourcing the patents for this.
Open sourcing merely means that any of the discoveries that are made as a result of this initiative are available for everyone to view and to then improve on, or then to continue their research, so that it's not then just California doing the research. It's sharing the information with researchers in Britain and Japan and Canada, and so it's a world community improvement, so that if patents don't get in the way of
providing care,
but also once it gets patented, it becomes proprietary,
right?
And so you can't see the formulation or how the research was done to get to that answer, or how it could be implemented.
So,
and
right.
there's no other company then that can produce it at what they think would be a fair cost. So they're removing
right.
Competition out of this whole thing.
In fact, if the intellectual property, the data, if the information necessary to make to affect these cures or treatments were public in the public domain, essentially,
mm-hmm.
in the same sense that literary material in the public domain can be published by anybody who publishes it in any medium. They don't
right.
have to pay any royalties.
Right.
If the information about the drugs or the cell procedures were similarly in the public domain,
mm-hmm.
anyone who wanted to implement it could do so without having to pay anyone a royalty.
Right.
And they would be able to modify it as they saw fit within
right.
the limits of keeping it
right.
safe, of course.
That's absolutely right. And the thing is that the Prop 71 people already said that they would save money by the health care savings. They wouldn't have to provide in-home care to an Alzheimer's or a Parkinson's
right.
patient. So they've already said that the state would save money just from the health care impact.
Okay, let's study that in a little more detail. Essentially, there's a person who has Alzheimer's and is receiving various amounts of care, and the state is paying an amount for it. Is it the argument of the Prop 71 people that after they're finished doing their research, that there will be some treatment that this person will be able to undergo, which will essentially restore them to their 40-year-old vigor?
And that's what they're saying.
And they can get up and throw away their canes and their assistance and go out there and be 40 years old again, essentially?
Well, I'm not sure 40, but
right,
I know
60,
that they are saying that they project. And see, and this is all speculation,
right,
as if they have this crystal ball.
Right.
What if it isn't anything wrong with our body? What if it's an environmental condition?
Right.
Say they find that Parkinson's is a result of eating too many M&Ms.
Right.
You know, then do you outlaw M&Ms?
Or if it's a matter of too much...
Or do you develop a drug that counteracts the M&M activity?
Right. I think their procedure is, rather than banning the M&Ms, or let's give it more of its a real face, which is air pollution, water pollution, and radiation, that might be cause of these diseases. Rather than do anything about them, they say, that's fine, that creates patients, but our drugs create healed patients, therefore you need our approach rather than
doing anything about the
causes,
exactly,
about which it's moot.
Exactly.
Let's switch a little bit over to talk about women in this in particular and try to straighten out some little confusion here, I think, about these embryos and where they come from and how they get made and so on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's been particularly prevalent here is the discussion that, for example, Mr. Salazar again says, most of the embryos used in the research will be leftovers donated by clients of infertility clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's obvious that the destruction of those embryos in order to get the stem cells is what bothers the pro-life opponents. But for people who don't mind about that so much, there's still the issue of how these embryos are created. And it's my understanding that in the step after the, for example, Harvard and the Howard Hughes Institute now have asked, or Harvard researchers have asked for permission to create cloned human embryos.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to do that by taking skin cells from people who have Parkinson's or diabetes or Alzheimer's,
mm-hmm,
and putting them in eggs, denucleated eggs,
mm-hmm,
and then creating embryos out of those and then breaking those apart to get the stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you consider that either ethically or practically distinct from the use of leftover embryos in fertility clinics?
Well, we do, because how they get those eggs,
right,
is the issue. And
right,
when we met with the Prop 71 team to sort of review our concerns and hope that we could be assured that this would be an okay proposition,
right,
I assumed that all of the eggs were coming from these in vitro fertilization clinics.
Because right,
if you thought they were donated from all over the United States, I thought, have enough.
Right.
What I was told was that you need hundreds of thousands of eggs, you know, or thousands of eggs.
Right.
You know, and that...
And how were you told they would be that those eggs would be gotten?
And then those eggs are... from harvested from women, they put them on their hyperovulation drugs,
right,
to make sure that they produce more than one egg,
right,
and then they go in laparoscopically and remove the eggs.
Now, is that dangerous for the women to do that?
Well, there's always a danger when you go in for surgery.
I meant
they're going to be under anesthesia.
General anesthesia.
Yeah.
Also the drugs, I meant, the initial hyperovulation drugs.
Any kind of hormone that you have to add to your body, just as, you know, we try to get athletes to stay off of steroids,
right,
because they're not healthy for you. You know, you get top performance, but it also increases your blood pressure, those kinds of things. With the women's drugs, there is the potential, though they have not done enough research, to show that it could cause uterine cancer and other side effects that aren't properly taken into consideration.
So who does that, which groups of women would you say would be most likely to end up having this done to them?
It would be pretty easy to figure it out. Most women who don't need money and who have time commitments to their jobs would not be as inclined to to, one, take drugs that can affect your mood,
right,
and affect your behavior,
right,
and affect your overall health.
If you'll pardon the expression, it could be PMS on steroids.
Right.
Yes.
And so what would happen is that women that are provided an incentive,
right,
you know, because they get compensated for the time and the medical expenses and things like that,
right,
it would be students, women students, women in poor socioeconomic groups that would be provided an incentive, because $1,000 or $2,000 over your medical expenses is a lot of money for people.
Right. Now, and we're talking about this, I think, just in terms of the research. If I understand the technology, which is still to be developed, of course, in part through this program,
mm-hmm,
if it goes ahead, is that when, in the future, when people are going to be treated with stem cells,
mm-hmm,
in order to be treated, the point of doing embryonic stem, one of the main points of doing embryonic stem cell research is to perfect the process by which a person with some problem or another would contribute one of his or her cells,
mm-hmm,
to be the genetic material from which would be inserted in the denucleated egg.
But you'd still have to harvest the egg.
Exactly. In other words, each patient who needed to have this process done to get good stem cells that were particularly suited for him or her, mainly because they would be genetically identical to his because they came from him, each of those would require one extra egg to be generated somehow by the process we've just talked about. Is that
right?
Is that about
but that's,
right?
But see, that's once they find
the cure.
The cure.
Right.
But
it,
you have to go through hundreds of thousands of eggs.
Right.
I forgot how many thousands of eggs it took to develop that one strain that was in the East Coast.
Right.
Can't even remember the numbers. Of that.
So until they develop an artificial egg,
mm-hmm,
they're going to need massive numbers of eggs from women,
mm-hmm,
both for the research and for the treatment once it's in place. And
mm-hmm,
that doesn't seem to be focused on very much here.
Right, and that was that. I mean, these are the issues that we're trying to get out there to the citizens of California, because everybody thinks that, you know, stem cell, you know, a lot of people think stem cell research is the way to go. And it may be, and we support it, but with adequate protections for the women. I mean, and don't put this on the commercial or on the thing, but it would be like asking a guy,
right,
to donate sperm,
right,
but telling him, and oh, by the way, you may have permanent or temporary erectile dysfunction.
Right.
You may or may not develop cancer of the testes. You may or may not develop cancer of the prostate. Would you consider, and we're going to have to do it under general anesthesia, would you consider doing that?
Well, I know I'd have a second thought.
Right. I mean, you can't even get men to agree to have a vasectomy, and that's not under general anesthesia.
Right.
And that's so that their partner doesn't have to go through under general anesthesia.
Right.
Right? They're right. All done with kids, but they don't want to go under the knife. But you're asking women to do this.
So really, without getting too much into the gender bias of this whole
mm-hmm.
operation, it's pretty, although it's fronted by some women, it's run by, for, and of men, and the people who are going to be picking up most of the tab are the physiologically, are the women who will be donating or selling their eggs.
Well, they can't sell them.
Well,
specifically.
Right.
I mean, in the proposition it says
right.
they can't sell them. But there is a certain amount of financial incentive to it, because
right.
they're going to say there's this flat fee for donating the eggs.
Right.
And then they're going to be providing the health care. The other thing in this initiative that isn't well put out there is that these people that are on these hormones that undergo these general procedures, general surgery, are not provided for if they have side effects from the medications or a side effect from the surgery, an abnormal surgery result. So
right.
they donate the eggs, but they have somehow inadvertently a nerve was cut.
Right.
They don't have health care for the rest of their life as a result of that surgery.
You're saying that they need to waive their rights to any litigation or liability?
Yeah, it's in the initiative.
Okay. The initiative also says, I think, that it's only designed to do therapeutic cloning, not reproductive cloning. Could you distinguish between the two and say whether you think that's an honest distinction in this case?
Well, it's an attempt to say that they aren't the same, but they are very, very similar because of the technique. And if I was a better scientist, I could actually explain it. The woman that I worked with to write our stem cell research position paper, Adrian Pine, really was the one that helped me be able to understand the differentiation. And it's a matter of days for how that blastocyst develops that differentiates whether it's therapeutic cloning or reproductive cloning, and it comes to the point where it's implanted into the woman's uterus versus therapeutic cloning where it's in a little petri dish and
right.
cloned.
So in fact, the distinction is, in other words, the same steps are gone through to denucleate an egg and to put in new genetic material
right.
and to vivify it, and then it grows for,
in
say, 5 days, in a petri dish for 5 days, at which point, if it's going to be used for, quote, therapeutic cloning, the blastocyst is ripped open and the cell mass is taken out to become stem cells.
Right.
And if it's going to become reproductive cloning,
it gets implanted
in her womb.
Uterus.
And there
yeah.
it goes. So everything they can learn about the glass and the microscopy mm-hmm. and every other kind of thing would be completely useful in doing reproductive cloning as
right.
well. Okay.
Right.
Could you comment a little bit about on this? I've been watching these ads as much as I can take them. Some of them they started off with these Nobel Prize winning doctors or near Nobel Prize winning doctors saying how they were interested in doing this research.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're having people, and apparently Michael J. Fox, who I admire as a person and as a performer, and have sympathy for as a patient with mm-hmm. Parkinson's, are being put in front of the public to say, we're suffering. If you vote for Prop 71, our suffering will end. Please help us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is morally legitimate?
I think it's very legitimate that they feel that this initiative will help alleviate their pain and suffering. And I would not want to deny them the benefits of some stem cell research if it could be done. What I'm saying is that this initiative is asking us to trade their pain and suffering for another person's pain and suffering, and we could not balance that. They're asking us to put a woman in a situation that we don't feel is the safeguards don't adequately protect them.
So you're right. So
they're asking us to do this trade-off. I'll trade your pain and suffering for this woman's pain and suffering, and we feel that there's a better way to do this research. There's a better way to make sure that everybody's needs are met and that everybody is adequately protected.
Okay, speaking specifically about that and on the positive side, the California Nurses Association has itself adopted a policy statement that expresses your support for embryonic stem cell research.
Absolutely.
As long as it meets certain criteria, let's talk about those criteria. You say a ban on commodification of human biological material and so
That's
on.
That's correct.
What does that mean and what would
that
it
means
do
that,
here?
That means that nobody makes a profit on this. When their research is done, it is available and open for everybody to benefit from.
That's the open sourcing that
That's
you were talking about.
That's the open sourcing.
Okay, and you also say assurance that the benefits are equally available to all regardless of the ability to pay.
That's right.
It's been my thinking that I haven't seen anything from MRIs to wonder drugs that are cheaper than the methods that they replace or supplant. And I'm wondering how the argument can be made, and to tell me what you think, that is being made by Pro 71 people saying this will reduce healthcare costs in California because these new treatments will lower the cost of healthcare in California. But how can they if they're even more expensive than the ones they're replacing?
Well, and that's part of our argument, is that they're saying that there will be a trickle-down theory. You know, the trickle-down theory works, and that it's initially expensive, but as it's made available to more and more people, the procedure or the treatment becomes cheaper and cheaper.
Right.
But you have to look at the time that the drugs are available for patent.
Right.
I think it's up to 20 years now.
Right.
So People keep saying, well, what about the sock vaccine? That benefited a lot of people and saved people from polio.
Right.
The patent on that drug was only 7 years.
Right.
And now it's 20 years. If we'd had the same patent laws that we have now for that polio vaccine, I shudder to think about what would have happened to a large population that was uninsured. And you want to remember that the government actually stepped in and bought the vaccines that we took on little sugar cubes at our public schools.
Okay.
It was given to us by a public health nurse. There are no, virtually, in a lot of the schools now, there's one school nurse for maybe every 4 or 5 schools. There used to be a school nurse at every single school. That's no longer in place. So for them to equate those situations doesn't properly reflect the current environment that we're in, especially with the power of the pharmaceutical industry, who makes billions of dollars already.
Your guidelines say that therapeutic cloning should not be permitted at present due to the likelihood it would lead to reproductive cloning while posing dangers to egg donors. You've talked on that about that a little bit.
We discussed that, and we don't feel that there are enough safeguards in place to protect the abuses that are potential in this, and especially with the way this initiative is, we don't see those protections in place.
How, if at all, would you like to see egg donor programs established?
We would like to see them as a result of donations from the IVF clinics with no compensation awarded to people that choose to donate them.
Okay, the problem there is, I guess, the IVF in vitro fertilization clinic embryos already have been fertilized by the male donor's sperm.
Not all of them.
You mean there are eggs? Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, there are eggs that are
eggs untouched,
unfertilized.
Unfertilized eggs.
I mean, and we actually have no disagreement with having the eggs fertilized and using those.
Right. I just meant that would present a problem because if you need to take a cell from the patient who's going to be treated, you can't do once.
Not all of the eggs get fertilized.
Right. Okay. In other words, the women are hyper ovulated
right.
in order to get them, and there's some extra
and then
unfertilized
they
eggs.
They harvest them, they
right.
put them in the freezer, and then they, because they don't take eggs from a woman 3 or 4 times
right.
in the in vitro. They harvest a whole bunch of eggs, and then they fertilize 1 or 2 and implant them, and
right.
then wait
to see what happens.
Yeah.
You also call for the prohibition of quote compensated gifting end quote for a collection of cadaveric fetal tissue and human eggs for the purpose of embryonic stem cell
right.
research.
Right. And
that?
Part of the reason we discussed that is that if a fetus died, you know, if a baby died and it hadn't come to full term.
Right.
Usually the reason a baby is miscarried or is lost, you know, doesn't come to full term,
right.
is that there's usually something wrong with that developing fetus.
Right.
So it would not make sense for us to say, yes, you could use this tissue or these cells.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because there's something wrong.
Right.
And we don't want to base that research on
it's
that.
Nature's way of saying
yeah,
there's something
nature's
wrong.
Nature's way of saying
right.
try again.
Right. Okay, so those are the terms and conditions under which you would like to see embryonic stem cell research. Do you see that you think that the state of California should appropriate funds to do that, and if so, under what terms and conditions?
I think that they could. I think that, and CNA is absolutely for the state of California being involved in this, but what we're concerned about now are the current healthcare disparities that are taking place in our state. There are, I think it was 8 million people without healthcare insurance in the state of California.
Right, again, so it's more navigation lessons while there are no life jackets.
Right.
Pick out in particular here the University of California system, saying that it has long-standing ties to pharmaceutical and biotech companies.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the problem about giving more money to them to do this research?
Because it's public funds,
right?
And then the private corporations profit from it. None of the developments would actually come back to the state as a way of making up for all of the money that was spent on the research of any discoveries. None of the benefits would come back to the state. So we're trying to say there really has to be a clear delineation. If the public is funding it, the public should benefit, not private corporations.
The Prop 71 people say that the private companies that get the patents will pay royalties to the state of California, which will increase the benefits even further to the state and allow, I think, even they go so far as to say lower tuition at the universities because there'll be so much money coming. Okay.
I mean, it's ludicrous to say that we will get some kind of royalty program for this. I mean, the federal government allegedly gets royalties from the National Institute of Health, but
right.
when you actually look at who's making the profits, all you have to do is look at the pharmaceutical industry and see that they are a multi-billion dollar industry that has made nothing but profit off of all of the research that private citizens have paid through their taxes.
Okay, now,
that's really the crux of the matter.
Prop 71 says that there will be established the Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say about the structure and function of that particular organization under this legislation?
Well, the way the whole institute is structured is very flawed in our mind because there is no public oversight. They talk about the two meetings a year where there is some public review and public scrutiny, but if you look at the initiative itself and you read the text, it clearly exempts anything that is patentable, anything that is remotely related to becoming possible patentable material, and anything tangential to becoming patented. So what else is there to talk about?
Right. So things like the Brown Act and Open Meeting Acts and Open
None
Records Act.
None of those apply.
And this is part of the California Constitution if it passes.
That's correct. And
okay.
then the other thing is that there's 50 members, 50 people on this board that then give out these grants.
Right.
It can only go to stem cell research. So it severely cuts down on the other research that could also lead to cures for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's to spinal cord injuries to diabetes. And the thing that I think that is missed is even with diabetes, you know, they talk about potential cures for diabetes.
Right.
The biggest, they're already doing research where they're implanting the beta cells into the pancreas that produce insulin.
Those are the same things as the islets of Langerhans and the cells that produce the insulin.
Right, but what ends up happening is those cells go in there and they start functioning
right.
like normal little insulin cells do.
Right.
But what happens is because type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease and they don't know what triggers that,
right.
their body again starts to attack those
right.
beta cells. So they haven't really cured diabetes by putting those cells in that produce insulin.
So, in fact, if they wanted to deal with that problem, they could deal with how the autoimmune reaction
right.
takes place, and that would even save their original beta cells.
Right.
And
but they haven't done that yet.
Unless, of course, they wanted to set it up so they'd have to get a dose of beta cells every week for the rest of their lives for a large amount of money.
Well, they last a little more than a week. I think it was 3 months or so.
All right, every 3 months. Okay, I think we've covered most of this. Before I talk to you a little bit more about the politics and let you go, is there anything we haven't covered, you think, about that your group feels about this?
It's one of those things where it's sort of like an artichoke. You know,
right.
you keep peeling off the leaves and keep
right.
peeling off the leaves, and you keep getting more. I know that it took me one reading to sort of think that, oh my goodness, I'm not really feeling comfortable about this because I said that we would consider endorsing it.
Right.
And then on my second and third reading, I found even more that was disturbing about this initiative. And then, so every time I've read it, you know, and I keep referring back to it just to make sure that my mind is clear about these concepts. There are so that initiative is so complex and so detailed, and then in some areas so vague,
right,
that it really is very difficult to comprehend just on one read through. So I really feel sorry for the voters of California, because you know, they want to do the right thing. You know,
right.
They, you know, in California, I know that our citizens are really compassionate,
right,
and they don't want to see somebody suffer unnecessarily.
Right.
But by the same token, they're voting to help save somebody and relieve them of their potential, you know, the pain.
Right.
But at the same cost, they're going to be causing pain and suffering from someone else.
If you had $3 billion to disperse over 5 years or so, over 10 years, how would you do it to improve the health of Californians?
Well, first of all, I would make sure that there was adequate funding for public health, that there was a single-payer system here in California, and implement that, and I'd still have probably $2.5 billion left over, because
right,
we could cover people on Medi-Cal, which we already, you know, we cover some children, and there's matching funds, and not all of that federal matching money is even utilized.
Right, because the state doesn't provide. You mean federal matching money?
Right,
which isn't acquired because the state doesn't put up the matching funds.
Right, and so. That would be one way, is to then have a single-payer system that would then cover everybody in the state of California. And CNA actually had initiative on the ballot maybe 8 years ago, Prop 216, that would have done that very thing.
Right.
And then with the other funds, I would adequately fund a research institute that would be part of the California health care system, because
right,
once you have people covered in health care,
right,
then there are ways that you can actually afford to then track what health care people have gotten, what leads people to develop type 1 diabetes.
Right, you're saying,
some
right,
of the best studies in what how to reduce the risk of complication in diabetes were done in England, in Sweden.
Countries who all have single-payer
plans. That already have health care coverage,
right,
so they can track those things.
So you're saying if money were used to bring more people into the medical coverage system, you'd get better information, and
mm-hmm,
you'd be able to mine that for valuable information,
right,
about treatment and
correct,
so on.
Okay. Absolutely
so,
correct.
Okay. And what else? Where else would the money go?
Then I would put it into preventative programs,
right,
because some of the people that are permanently disabled are disabled because they were driving drunk.
Right.
Not all, but a few. Some people weren't wearing seatbelts. Some people weren't taking care of their health. Some people didn't have the knowledge of what they needed to do to take care of themselves. That would probably cost maybe a couple hundred thousand for health education.
Right. So in other words, if money were spent, for example, to convince people not to smoke cigarettes,
mm-hmm,
it could have more leverage than developing a very expensive treatment that would regenerate lung cells,
right,
and you'd be used to replace them.
Oh, you're so smart. Absolutely.
Right.
So
okay,
so then you really could do other research, but then it would be open sourcing. It would be available to the greater nation and international research community, and we would build on the successes and failures that other research groups have had.
And in fact, that would make, quote, California the leader in stem cell research rather than, quote, Aventis or Pfizer.
Right.
Okay. Why don't we wrap up with the politics of this? As was previously mentioned, the no on 71 side has about 150, and the other side has about 22 times 200 times as much money.
Mm-hmm.
how
2,200 times.
Well, we got less than a million, a tenth of a million, and they've got 20 million. So that's 200 times as much money. And they're running the ads, and I haven't seen any no on 71 ads.
And you probably won't.
Right.
For
right. So what strategy are you and your allies in the Alliance Against 71 going to be doing?
It's more of a grassroots campaign.
Right.
Working with friends, you know, that we've had over time that we've found are on the opposite side. I don't know if you know this, but the San Mateo Medical Association, who was pro Prop 71,
right,
reversed their position, you know, after we brought out our concerns.
Okay.
And reversed their position and are now against it. So I think the more we can get out a real argument, instead of just being afraid of the people that are pro-life,
right,
really articulating other arguments for why this is bad for the citizens of California, I think voters are going to really want to take a second look at this.
Have you been involved, or are you going to be involved in any debates on this?
As they come up, our position gets out there more and more, we've been asked to participate, and I know that Marcy Darnowski from the Center for Genetics and Society was on a debate with KQED. There's been several other media outlets that have, because up until the time CNA came out with our position, there was virtually no opposition.
Yes, you're right.
This proposition at all. Everybody was really concerned about the politics of it and about going out against it, because we would frankly be against the very patients that we're trying to help.
Right. Well, address that issue when people say, "Well, what about our patient? What about your patients with all these things? Don't you care about them? What's your answer
right
to that?"
And our argument is, we care very much about them, but we also care about their future, and we care about our other patients that aren't in the hospital right now, and how we care about the patients that we're dealing with now that are in wheelchairs, that have chronic conditions, is they probably have public health care as a result of being on, like, Medi-Cal or government subsidies for their insurance. If the money ran out as a result of this initiative, their health care would be cut, their in-home daycare would be cut, and any other services that they get that are a result of the California state budget. So they're looking for the long-term benefit.
Right. So in fact, what would happen is Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill developed utilitarianism, and they said that the public ethic that should be in place is the greatest good for the greatest number.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like if you calculated the benefits and the detriments to everyone involved here, mm-hmm, that essentially, well, how would you evaluate it?
Well, see, and what the California Nurses Association looked at was balancing the risks and benefits for everyone,
right,
and trying to have everyone come out a winner. And I think with our stem cell research position paper, I think we pretty much found that balance in putting forward sort of guidelines for how any stem cell research would be funded, and how the donors would be solicited, that it does balance everybody's needs.
So in fact, the choice before people and before the voters in the state is not between embryonic stem cell research the Prop 71 way, or no embryonic stem cell research and no hope of any benefit from that technology,
mm-hmm,
but the choice also includes embryonic stem cell research done the CNA way,
mm-hmm,
which might have those benefits but would balance the risks and benefits in a different way.
Is absolutely that? And I think it's an unfortunate political climate that we've gotten into, where President Bush has become very intransigent,
right,
on this issue, and really defunded stem cell research.
And in fact, because he has, the yes on 71 people try to channel people's dislike, let's call it that, of President Bush and his policies into pro-71 sentiment.
Right, and saying if you vote for this, this is the last chance you'll get to vote for stem cell research.
Right, and if
and
you,
we're saying that that's not the case.
Okay.
I mean, it really isn't.
Right. All right, well, I want to thank you very much for talking to us.
Okay.
And hopefully in the next few weeks that are left before the election, maybe we can talk again.
Okay, and how do I access your website?
Well, you access the website by going to, well, you just go to Google.
Google.
You go to Google at google.com.
Okay.
And then type in California Politics Today, and that'll take you there. Or you can go a little more indirectly. You can go to Etopia Media. Etopia Media, M-E-D-I-A, one word, etopiamedia.net, and then scroll down to where it says Etopia Media Political News Network. Click on that. Then you'll see where it says California Politics Today. Click on that.
Okay.
You'll be there. Then you'll see the link to your interview and the other ones about this. Click on that and so on.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.